Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Conservationist Assembled podcast. We're teaming up with the most heroic conservationists in the world to uncover their tales and knowledge about the stunning biodiversity of our planet. Today we're heading out to the wilds of Madagascar to explore a whole gang of creatures that usually don't get the spotlight. It's time to hear all about the small carnivores of Madagascar, and we've got the ultimate guide, Hannah Sturgeon, joining us for the ride. Hannah, thanks for joining the podcast. How's life treating you?
Thank you for having me. Well, thank you. How are you?
Yes, very good. Thank you. I'm excited to talk to you about these overlooked carnivores that we're going to delve deeper into today. So, logical place to start then. Can you tell us about some of these Madagascan carnivores, please?
Yes, absolutely. So today, when we kind of keep mentioning Madagascan carnivores, we're essentially talking about eight different species. One of the carnivores that some people may have heard of in Madagascar is the fossa, and we're actually going to leave them out of the conversation today because they are relatively well known and quite well represented in zoos and things now, which is absolutely amazing. So we're going to kind of fly the flag for the weird ones and the ones that we don't often see and just bring a bit more attention to them and don't want the fossa still in their spotlight. So when we're discussing the carnivores today, we are talking about Boki Boki, ring-tailed Voncera, Grandidier's Voncera, broad-striped Voncera, brown-tailed Voncera, western and eastern Phalaenuchs, and spotted Phalaenuchs. And they are a small little family of mostly kind of mongoose and civet-like creatures, just to give you a bit of a reference to the size that we're dealing with when it comes to these guys. So they are found in various parts of Madagascar. They have lots of different habitats that they would inhabit. So if we just go through a couple of them. So the Boki Boki, some people may have seen in zoos. There are a few zoos in the UK and Europe that do hold these guys. They're generally found in western Madagascar. They're kind of a greyish colour with long black stripes running along the body, and they are a diurnal species, so they're active during the day. And they also appear to live in matriarchal family groups, which is really interesting, so quite similar to meerkats. And the family groups will share rearing of the young as well. They tend to be insectivorous, but they have been seen eating bird and reptile eggs as well. And they will also snack on small rodents and potentially even small mouse lemurs, which may make them a little bit more unpopular for eating the cute things as well. And then we move on to the ring-tailed Voncera. They are probably the ones that you could spot out of a lineup if you were seeing all of these guys pictured at once. So they are bright red in colour. They are absolutely beautiful. And then they have black rings around the tail, which is where the name obviously comes from. They tend to be found in the northeast, down the east side of the island, all the way down to the southeast as well. And they are also primarily diurnal, with some activity during crepuscular and nocturnal periods. They're often seen on camera traps in pairs, but we're still learning a little bit more about their social life, really. And they are quite well known in Madagascar and seen quite often because they're very good at scavenging through human camps and things like that as well. So they're one of those ones that we know a little bit more about because we do just happen to see them that little bit more. And then we have, kind of at the opposite end of the spectrum, the broad-striped Voncera, the brown-tailed Vonceras. Those guys are very, very much lesser known. There's only a couple of photos of them in existence, really, that have been caught on camera traps and things, far more elusive. And same with the Phalaenuchs species as well, the westerns and the easterns. And then the one that looks slightly different from everyone else, I would say, is the spotted Phalaenuchs. So they're found in the northeast and down the east side of the island all the way to the southeast. And they are nocturnal, insectivorous, and will also snack on some small vertebrates and eggs and things as well. And they are the second largest of the carnivores after the fossa, but by no means anywhere near their size at all. So they're a really interesting one. They are kind of a brownish colour with small black spots that run along their body, all over their body. And have kind of they're longer on their legs, they're a little bit taller, and with like almost like a shovel nose in a way, like a snout that they have there. So yeah, they look different from the rest of these guys that we're kind of talking about today, I would say. But yeah, really, really interesting and varied group. And they are very similar in that they all have like varied diets, various places that they're found, things like that. But yeah, they are also very different because in this group we do have diurnal, nocturnal, crepuscular species, and we have all sorts of habitats that these guys are found in as well for the different species. So some of them might be found in forests, found in limestone areas for the Grandidier's Voncera, for example, and also in marshlands for some of the other species. So yeah, they're very, very varied group that we're talking about.
Then kind of the wider picture of biodiversity as in Madagascar as a whole. We know, obviously, certainly endemic species and biodiversity on islands are at greater risk of threat. So would you say that largely the IUCN classifications and population trends for these are all very similar and they are in a state of decline?
So the only one currently listed as least concern is the ring-tailed Monstera, the lovely red one. Everyone else, we have 3 endangered species and 4 vulnerable species. But even with the least concern species, all 8 species are suspected to be declining, unfortunately. So this has been kind of through studies over the years. Like I say, some of these species are really only seen on camera traps, but just by seeing how often they pop up on camera traps, there does still seem to be a decline in those species as well. So yeah, definitely not a very positive picture for them in the wild at the moment.
And circling back to a bit in your first description of these species and more specifically with regards to the variation in their diets and how widespread they are throughout Madagascar in their different environments, what role do these small carnivores play within the larger ecosystem?
So we're still learning a lot about them, but I would say largely their main role would be population control of rodents especially and things like that, and invertebrates, absolutely, because they do have quite an insect-rich diet in the wild, which is fairly seasonal as well. But yeah, population control of the kind of smaller Madagascan critters is definitely part of it, and without them, obviously, we, like you say, Madagascar is very unique in its species in lots of ways, but they still need their populations controlled when it comes to the small mammals and things like that as well. So yeah, so they still have an important job.
And so with that job in mind, you know, in terms of needing these small carnivores around, but that, you know, the majority of them are now endangered, where are the threats to these species coming from?
So there are a number of threats for these guys. So a huge one is habitat destruction, and that can be for a number of reasons. So largely for mining is a huge problem in Madagascar. Deforestation in general, just to clear areas and use the woods, and also preparing areas for agricultural use as well, can be quite a big problem for these guys. And then also, as you kind of briefly mentioned, threats from just being on an island and that being where you happen to have evolved. It only takes a natural disaster or a forest fire or something, and you're potentially wiping out huge areas of habitat for these guys. So yeah, very, very much at risk from a whole variety of things, really. And then they do also have other species that are putting them under some pressure as well. So the introduction of the Indian civet has caused some unnecessary competition and additional pressures when you've already got a limited number of resources and a limited area to live. And domestic dogs and cats being introduced has also been a huge issue for these guys. So some species have been hunted for bushmeat as well, as they've been kind of come into more contact with people, or their body parts are sometimes used within cultural celebrations as well. So as a result of all of these factors, populations have been severely fragmented in some areas, so they're just not meeting different individuals and being able to share their genetics, really, and keep things moving out there. So that's going to likely be another problem further down the line as well, where we may have some genetic issues coming into play as well.
Focusing on trying to provide a future or ensure a future, for these species, what actions are being taken to help the current situation for small carnivores in Madagascar?
So there are a number of protected areas and national parks that are found across Madagascar that provides a level of protection, which is absolutely amazing. So a couple of examples are the Rana Mafana National Park, Makira Natural Park as well, and many, many others that I won't try to pronounce. But they are very important in ensuring that there are those areas that are being protected from deforestation and habitat destruction. In captivity, there's also a number of zoos working together in research, breeding programs, and creating a better understanding of the species. So just trying to work out exactly what they need so that we can then provide that in the wild for them as well is very, very important. And there's also some very generous individuals who are dedicated to ensuring the survival of these species, which is really important and amazing to have that extra support, and they're contributing their own resources to support the mission of zoos and what we're trying to do in captivity as well. But also in terms of actions, just getting the word out that they exist. We really need to raise awareness of them. lemurs are incredible, but they're not the only thing that Madagascar has to offer. We need to look at the entire ecosystem. So it's an incredibly diverse island, and it has an amazing mammals, reptiles, amphibians, invertebrates, and many of them are vulnerable to extinction. So we need to look at the whole picture, really, and the whole island, and create a way to improve things in Madagascar and conserve everyone to some degree.
In trying to improve things, then, what are the next steps that may be taken to help ensure that future for these species?
So we really are trying to increase our understanding of all these different species. Of the eight that we're talking about, there are currently five of them being kept in EASA collections, at least. So we're definitely increasing our understanding of them, but also carrying on with the remote camera trap work for the lesser seen ones, so that we do have more of an understanding of what's going on with their population, and also just their behavior, their ecology. Where are they going? What are they up to? We really need to know everything, because we're starting at the beginning for lots of these animals, which is really an exciting place to be, because everything you learn is new with lots of these. So yeah, so it is an exciting place to be, but there is a lot of work to do as well. And we'll hopefully as well at some point be able to set up some conservation programs that does focus on these species a little bit more, or even just incorporates them. It can look at Madagascar in a wider degree, but yeah, like I say, just keep raising awareness for these guys and making sure they're in the projects as well.
Fantastic. And what can we, as people in the UK or listeners around the world who don't necessarily work in conservation or live in Madagascar, do day to day to help or reduce the impact of the threats?
I think the good thing about these is that you just need to kind of carry on or start with the usual things that we're told about, and it's easy to kind of turn off to them a little bit in hearing that you should be using sustainable FSC wood, for example, so that you're not contributing to deforestation or illegal logging and things like that. Recycle as much as you possibly can, just to, again, minimize your impact on the environment, and yeah, just to help out, especially like say with them being on an island, whatever we can do to help reduce our impact on climate change will hopefully slow down the possibility of anything happening with natural disasters and things like that as well. So just, yeah, do what you've been hearing about for years and stick with it, and there will be benefits from that.
What projects that may, you know, be telling us to do those things are ongoing that may be funded by zoos or by members of the public that might be donated to?
So there are many, many projects that are working out in Madagascar, which is absolutely incredible. And they will hopefully protect these small carnivores under their umbrella while they're looking at habitats for lemurs, for example. So, yeah, hopefully the small carnivores will still reap the benefits from that. Zoos such as Chester and Jersey Zoo have projects in Madagascar, and they're also directly empowering local people to be more involved with their wildlife as well, which will be really important for the long-term survival of the projects, really, and of their outcomes. And there are plenty of other good zoos and NGOs who will also be doing the same in various ways, which is absolutely amazing. So just continue supporting good zoos, especially if you do know the projects, or do a bit of research into the projects that they're working on and who they support, what charities they support. And at Beeds, where I currently work, we have plans to send out some remote camera traps to the projects that need it to help survey areas, specifically looking for small carnivores as well. So we are a very, very small collection that I'll kind of talk to you a bit more about a bit later on. But yeah, even small zoos and small collections can still have an incredible impact. So don't think that you just have to go to the huge zoos to make a difference. You know, going to some of these small ones can have just as much of an impact as well, and help them get projects off the ground and help them support conservation as well as a team.
And what is one of your favourite moments while working with Madagascan carnivores been?
I think they can be, with their size, they can be quite shy. You also get some very, very brave individuals who have not realised that they are tiny, but you can get some very, very shy ones. So it's always nice when we are working with these guys to have one who comes out of their shell a little bit and stops just running away from you and realises that you are bringing food, and it's actually quite fun if you stay nearby, you get fed quicker and things like that. So yeah, just having those little moments of one of the shy ones like putting their foot on your boot for the first time, for example. And yeah, it's just little moments like that sometimes that you just kind of have to cling on to, and makes you realize that, yeah, how many people have had a Vonsera like touching their shoes. I mean, it seems so silly, but like you suddenly think like, oh, I'm in a 0.1% of the world right now. This is incredible. So yeah, it's good to think about those small moments, I think.
Do you remember what your first experience with the Madagascan carnival was?
I know it would have been during kind of my interview and tour at the first exotic collection I ever worked at. At the time was a private collection. I don't remember seeing one for the first time, but I remember seeing the Phanaloca for the first time. And as a human, we like to put things in boxes and know where they fit. And I just remember looking at it and thinking, like, what are you? Where do you belong? And they are just special little animals. And being around for the first breeding of that pair was absolutely incredible. It was the first breeding in Europe, I believe. So yeah, it was amazing working with those guys through that period.
And following on from that, do you have any lighthearted or fun stories from around your time with these animals as well?
Yeah, so one that always springs to mind was a ring-tailed Vonsera that I was working with at the time. We had a female, and she was a little bit of a demon for her size. So she was one of those brave individuals who, yeah, had absolutely no fear of me whatsoever, which was great. And then I was just in there kind of doing a full substrate change. And it was something we did every week. And while I was kind of crouched down just on the floor, on my knees with a dustpan and brush, she decided that today of all day, she needed to jump on my head and like dig her claws into my scalp and just scream. And like, you don't hear very many noises from Madagascan small carnivores quite a lot of the time. And this was probably one of the first times that, yeah, I'd heard a noise from her. And it was just, yeah, an ear piercing scream, which was absolutely terrifying, because then I wanted to know what was wrong. But and then she just kind of jumped off back to her normal perch and just sat there looking at me, and clearly I just offended her with whatever I was cleaning up that day. So yeah, and she never did it again. It was just a one-off warning, I think, of like, I can do this if I want to, I just won't. Just
acted like nothing happened afterwards and you imagined it.
Yeah, like I was insane.
Fantastic. I think you've given us a great insight into, you know, an idea of what these animals are, you know, physiologically and ecologically, their threats and how we can ensure their future. So now I'd like to switch track and talk a little bit about your background and your career in hopefully an attempt to pay it forward, as we know it's an industry that lots of people want to get into. So what was your first experience with zoos, and when did you know you were going to become a zookeeper?
So I was very lucky as a child. My family were happy taking me to zoos and letting me drag them around and stare at animals for a few hours at the weekend and things like that in school holidays. And I'd say that I first knew that I was going to become a zookeeper when I was 9 years old during one of those visits. So we were actually at Paradise Wildlife Park in Hertfordshire, and there was a stall there at the time for 21st Century Tiger, which recently rebranded to the Wildcats Conservation Alliance. And I remember there was just like a little marquee, and we was looking at the stalls and things, and I took a little leaflet away with me and was reading that on the drive back home and stuff, and it spoke about the population numbers for all the tiger subspecies at the time. And I was kind of as outraged as a 9 year old could be at the time. And it was a very pivotal moment in thinking, I'm gonna do something about this. I need to help. I love tigers. What am I going to do? And at the time, I wrote a letter to Tony Blair, and also wrote letters because, you know, what would he do about tigers? Also wrote letters to London Zoo and to Paradise and things like that, saying like, yeah, I'm 9. I'll be applying for a job in a few years. Look out for me. Like, what could I do to help, basically? And that was really how it all started for me.
So you tell our listeners about yourself and an insight into your background and your journey to where you are currently.
Yeah, sure. So I've worked in a number of animal care settings kind of as I was growing up. So I've worked in kennels and cattery. That was kind of like my first work experience when I was sort of 15, 16, because I couldn't get into any zoos at the time. So that was where I started off and absolutely loved it. Had a great time. And then through education, kind of carried on with with work experience and volunteering. So, and that was in places like wildlife hospitals, which was amazing, seeing the array of British wildlife that we have, and having that close contact and a better understanding of what's going on was amazing. I've worked at a goat sanctuary with over 150 goats, which kept us very busy. Again, great opportunity to work with any species in that number, I think, is amazing, because you see everything, you see every good part, you see every problem, and you learn everything there is to know, in a way. Like, you see it all. And then I've also worked in a couple of private collections and zoos of various sizes as well, and during my sort of 10-11 years working full-time, at least with animals and things, I've worked as a volunteer and intern keeper at various levels, and with a range of species on different sections of things as well. And then I've moved into my current position of zoo manager just over a year ago. So I'm at a small collection called Bead Zoo down near Eastbourne, where I currently work with 3 of the 11 Grandidiers Montsera that are currently kept in captivity in the Yarza zoos as well. So yes, an incredible, like I say, small place, but we are trying to have that big impact in what we do, and working with the students that we have, and just encouraging that love of the natural world, really.
And has there been one individual animal and or species in your career so far that you've gained a particular attachment to?
Very difficult to say. I've been lucky to have worked with so many incredible species and so many amazing individuals in those species as well. So all the small cats that I've worked with, very high on the list. I worked with an amazing ocelot called Billy, who is an absolute dream to work with. Clouded leopards will always be a very firm favourite of mine as well. Binturong, one of those species that I kind of never really imagined playing such a big role in my life, but yeah, I love them. I think they're incredible, and I love seeing people's reaction to them as well, because again, they have that same reaction as me seeing a Phanaloca, of going, well, where does it go? What box do I put a binturong in? Is it a bear? Is it a cat? I love kind of introducing people to binturong. And I've also worked with some amazing snow leopards, tigers, all sorts. And a lot of those are kind of expected, I suppose, especially on the cat side of things, because that was always where I was heading towards. But then kind of in my wider career, I've worked with some amazing birds, parrots and birds of prey, who are incredible and have had such great personalities and brilliant bonds with them as well. So yeah, I've been incredibly lucky to have so many, but I couldn't possibly pick one.
I didn't mean to pigeonhole you, but yeah, I completely appreciate that. What does a typical day look like for you?
It's very varied. There's being a small collection, we are involved in everything. So yeah, we're a small team. So depending on the day, it'll be liaising with vets, for example, if there's something going on, health checking animals, cleaning, feeding, giving tours to our students and things like that, and working with them down to all the paperwork and research and all that kind of stuff as well. So it can be very, very varied. I do like to try and fit in and get out of the office and away from the computer as much as possible and fit in time with the team, and yeah, make sure that I kind of still see some animals in my day, because otherwise it would be quite easy to just be kind of sitting there writing emails about them and not actually see them very much.
And what is the favourite part of your role?
My favourite part of kind of any role has always been animal training, I would say. So I do like to try and fit that in when I can as well. I think it's incredible that we can give animals that much freedom and choice to take part in their own healthcare or get in the carry crate themselves before we take them to the vets or want to weigh them or whatever it may be. I think it's incredibly important to give animals that freedom and listen to them as well in terms of what they're trying to tell you, if they're happy, comfortable or whatever it may be. So yeah, I love to fit in a bit of animal training and see where we can what we can get animals to do and how far we can take it.
Maybe specifically in training setting then, but maybe also even in more widespread, is there one lesson that you say animals have taught you?
Definitely persistence, and yeah, it can apply to the training and the wider job role as well. So yeah, persistence is definitely one thing. It's not easy to get into this industry sometimes. there will be knockbacks and disappointments and things like that. So yeah, you need to stick with it and just keep going. And even once you are in, you have bad days, you have good days, and whatever's going on in the zoo, and if your animals are poorly or anything like that, you just pick yourself up and you carry on because they need you. So yeah, the persistence is very important.
And who were your influences on you and your career path?
You just have to say David Attenborough, don't you? kind of a number of generations now, I would say. I think, yeah, watching, having him bring animals into your home while you're sitting there watching TV is incredible. And yeah, I can only hope that it's kind of, yeah, inspired that passion in individuals, in thousands of individuals in some way or another, whether they've gone into conservation or if they're just kind of supporting it from afar in a different role. But yeah, like making changes at home with their recycling habits and things like that. So yeah, he's an incredible ambassador for all animals, which I think is amazing that he's never been tempted to specialize in a way. His specialism is everything, which is amazing. But also other influences of, I've been lucky to work with some absolutely incredible people all throughout my career, so they've been very inspirational as well. So I'm sure they know who they are if they happen to listen. But yeah, lots of the people I've worked with have been absolutely incredible. So yeah, couldn't have kind of got here without them either.
And what advice would you give to someone looking to pursue a career in conservation?
Stick with it is definitely a big part of it, and I think also, be prepared to be flexible. You might not get the role that you think you want straight away with the species you want, for example, or the collection you want, or the NGO that you want to be in, kind of thing. But yeah, you can move around, and you just need to, yeah, maybe you need to build up your experience somewhere else and then move on. Or maybe you'll end up with mammals when you thought you were going to be working with birds, for example, and realize you love mammals, or vice versa. Or yeah, just be flexible and take the opportunities, but not only take them for your benefit or like with the view to move on, but take them and absorb everything you possibly can, because it may not feel like it, but it will still be relevant to your role one day, wherever you end up and wherever you want to be. So yeah, you just take in absolutely everything you can and make the most of it, because one day, 20, 30 years down the line, your role will have changed by then. Maybe you're in an office doing curating or working on records or more sciencey based, and you're not in the field as much, for example, more lab based. And you'll be thinking, oh, remember that time when I was in the rainforest, like looking for invertebrates and things like that. So yeah, just make the most of all of it.
And what are some of your proudest achievements to date?
I would definitely say a few years ago, like working with a lovely pair of snow leopards and having a chance to be their animal trainer for various kind of veterinary behaviours, and getting them both to a point of taking injections by hand rather than using a big scary dart gun or a blowpipe is a huge achievement, but also managing to train them both for ultrasound behaviours as well. So even though one was a male, ultrasounds aren't just used for pregnancies and things. So yeah, make sure that we could build that behaviour for our male and our female to, like I say, take part in their healthcare and just have it as a backup plan, I suppose, if it was ever in need. And also then building that onto a blood sample behaviour as well. And although we never had to give them a blood sample, they were fully prepared to have that with, if need be, kind of thing. So never actually took the sample, but they'd had all of the stages up to that point. So hopefully they would have been absolutely fine.
Excellent. I think that's, you know, a great insight into your background and some very wise words. And hopefully any of our listeners who are hoping to pursue a career in conservation will find some comfort in what you said. And so we're going to finish up today with just some quick fire questions, just to finish on a light note, because it can sometimes be very heavy. So are there any dream species that you'd love to work with or see in the wild?
So Indri, a big one, which are an incredible lemur species, and yeah, they'd be amazing to see in the wild. I think that'd be, yeah, brilliant. Orca, absolutely love orca, so it'd be amazing to see those. yeah, it's quite high on the list of wildlife spotting for me at some point. And then just generally, just all the small cats, just give me them all in the wild, working with them in captivity. Absolutely anything would be amazing. And again, they're another kind of group, very much like the Madagascan small carnivores, that I think need more representation and more people to shout about them. So yeah, I love a small cat. I think they're just the most incredible family of animals with, again, so much diversity.
Would there be one country or continent that you'd either love to call home or at least spend, you know, an extended amount of time in?
From a zookeeper side of me, I would say North America for some of the zoos out there. Got some incredible collections and incredible setups and habitats for the animals and things, so that would be amazing, and some great wildlife as well. But then more so from, yeah, the wildlife-y side, I would say Southeast Asia for their wildlife. Got an incredible range of animals out there that I'd absolutely love to see.
And if there was one species from around the world that could be native to your home country with no negative effects on the ecosystem, what would it be?
I think the UK could do with a primate to mix things up a bit. We've not got anyone like that. So, yeah, I feel like that would be an interesting mix for us. So, yeah, maybe some like marmosets or some squirrel monkeys, just nothing too big to cause any real damage to everything, but just a species to keep us on our toes a little bit and cause a little bit of trouble would be nice, I think.
Yeah, I could agree with that. It's a nice fit in kind of a gap of UK wildlife. So yeah, I think that's a really great answer. And if you could be an animal, what would it be and why?
I think it would have to be a palace cat, just to be able to look that miserable all the time and still be that cute. And just to, yeah, warm my feet up on my tail would, yeah, seems like a pretty great life, really. And yeah, just be out in the middle of nowhere, no one annoying you, sounds like.
That tail does sound very handy. And you're not working, Hannah, how do you keep busy?
I like going to like shows and concerts and the theatre and stuff like that, so that's, yeah, something that I always enjoy. And also I'm quite a bit of a foodie, so I like trying new food, new restaurants and things like that. Yeah, just trying some not too weird stuff, but yeah, trying some unusual dishes or unusual recipes and things like that. Always, it's a good way to keep me happy. Just give me some food.
Last question then. What is one thing you think that our listeners should take away from today's episode?
I think I'd love for people to just be a bit more aware of some of the weird species that are all over the world. It'd be great if you focus on Madagascan small carnivores and have a huge interest in them. But I think, yeah, just remember that the species you see on TV or in zoos, they're not all that there is. You know, like look into some of the weird things and the small mammals and the birds and invertebrates that they have, because some of the stories and some of the behaviours of those animals are just incredible. So, yeah, I just kind of want to wave a flag for the small weird animals. and when you do go to zoos, are lucky enough to have them, spend that extra bit of time to look around for them and try and spot them if they're a bit more elusive or read the signs and things like that. So your iconic animals are amazing, but yeah, don't forget about the little guys.
And that's a wrap on our final question. Thank you, Hannah, for joining me on the podcast and representing the amazing animals that call Madagascar home. I had a blast chatting with you and I can't wait to see what you do next. If you loved this episode as much as I did, be sure to follow Hannah's work, the work of Bee Zoo on Facebook and the podcast's adventures on Instagram. And don't forget to spread the work via liking and sharing and rating the show. Most importantly, thank you for tuning in, friends. Stay wild and I'll catch you next time.